What I will talk about today is not, these are not really recent results. They've already been published, and it's mostly work done with direct numerical simulation of turbulent flows, three-dimensional, and this is a work that has been going on for some years with these colleagues. So Jeremy is in France, Luca Bifarale is in Rome, Massimo Cincini is in Rome, Italy also, Stefano Musacchio is Nice also, in France. Andrea Scagliarini is now in Spain, and Federico Toschi is in the Netherlands, but now here. So what I want to talk about is mainly the way particles distribute in space in a turbulent flow and the way they approach each other. So the statistics or their velocities at changing their distances. The motivation of this beyond, so the theoretical interest is mainly in any turbulent flows that has particles, but mostly for geophysical flows. So we can also think to what happens in clouds, so water droplets moving in the air, turbulent flow. And there are major differences between a real cloud and what we can do on a computer by a direct numerical simulation. One of these differences is clearly the Reynolds number of the flow, so the level of turbulence in the flow. And so in this talk, I would like mostly to focus on properties that we can show that do not belong on the Reynolds number of the flow. So this will give us an hint that these properties may be also found in real geophysical flows and not only in small-scale experiments. So general problem is of a two-phase dispersed flow. So you have to imagine the flow can be any kind of flow, but it has to be a multi-scale flow. So it's not a simple flow with just one typical length and one typical time scale, but there is an ensemble of these, and in this flow that can be any Newtonian flow, you have a discrete phase that is dispersed, and these are very small particles. By very small, we mean smallest than any turbulent active scale in the flow, and these particles are generally described by this set of equations, so their velocity and their acceleration if they have some inertia. So if because of their density or because of their size, they have also some inertia that make their motion different from that of the flow. And here I want to focus only on the problem of interactions of particles with the flow. So the particles are just advected passively by the flow, and I will neglect all these features that would complicate the problem much. So particle-particle interactions, we will not have real collisions because it's a dilute suspension. The mass load of particles on the flow will also be very low, so that particles do not modify the flow. And then I will also neglect any problem related to particle deformation, surface tension, and whatsoever. So a slide about motivation. So we have, if we think to turbulent clouds, so clouds that are mostly formed by convection processes, and so in these clouds, there is the small droplets have this kind of evolution in size. So when they first nucleate, they are very small. So this is a micron size scale. They are very small, and they nucleate around an aerosol particle. Then they grow, start to grow after the nucleation process has ended. They start to grow by condensation of water vapor onto their, so transformation of water vapor into liquid. And then at a certain moment that it's not really clear when it happens, the condensation process ends and particles start to coalesce. And we can also try to describe this phenomena by a continuous field equation, that it's just the time evolution of the droplet or particles distribution of, say, of size A, so in time and in space. And this equation would be of this kind, so there are many terms. There is the advection term of the distribution of particles into the flow. Then there is a term that is related to the variation of size due to this condensation phenomena of water vapor onto the droplet surface. And then there is the coalescence term, which is formed by two terms, because each time you form a new particle of a given size, you have a particle of the previous size that is disappearing. And so one of the problems in this equation, there are many problems, but one of the problems is try to give a convincing form to this collision kernel, so to the way particles encounter and grow in size. And clearly, this equation is very much complicated if we take into account that in clouds you have radiation, you have microphysical effects, you have gravity, you have different level of turbulence. And so, but going step by step, one of the problems that people are very interested in now is trying to give a shape to this term. And for this, we need to know how particles distribute in space and how they encounter. So there are classical approaches to this collision rate problem that date long ago. And so the collision rate is very simple. Is the product, at least formally, is very simple. It's the product of the local concentration of droplets of two sizes, A and A prime, multiplied by the target area, clearly depends on the target area, and then the relative velocity at which particles meet. So this relative velocity has to be negative, clearly, to have an encounter of particles. And so a classical way to describe this collision rate is by what Safman and Turner derived some 50 years ago, more than 50, and it's to say that at small scale, because these particles are supposed to be very small, their velocity is just the local shear that particles see multiplied by the sum of their scale, by their distances. So the velocity, the relative velocity of the particles is just the local shear that you can think just as the inverse of the Kolmogorov time scale in a turbulent flow, and then their mutual distance by the centers. But this, so this, so you see that this collision rate varies with the third power of the size of the droplets or the particles. And this means that this collision rate is not giving a major contribution because particles are very small. And then the hypothesis on which it relies on are valid only for very small particles. So really very small particles that see a local shear for which velocity can be expressed in this way. So very small particles that are mostly following the fluid streamlines. And also it's relevant only for very energetic turbulence. Epsilon is the kinetic energy dissipation rate, because this gamma is just proportional to the square root of epsilon. So, and at the opposite limit, when particles are not small, but they are very big, so that the gravity acceleration dominates over their turbulent acceleration, there is another shape for the collision kernel, that it's just based on the fact that the particles, particularly if they have very different sizes, they just catch one into another because of their terminal velocity. So they just fall down with their terminal velocity, and then there is some modulation due to the collision efficiency. But this collision kernel is relevant only when the particles are very big, and particularly if they have different sizes. Otherwise, their terminal velocity will be just the same. and they will never. So one way that people try to look at this problem in turbulent flow is not doing real collision, but just doing what has been called the ghost collision approach. And it goes back to this work by Sundaram and Collins. And it's to say, okay, let's look at the probability that particles meet. Not the real collision that would imply the fact that then particles are modified and the flow is modified also by the collision, but just the probability to have a collision at for particle of given size. And so you can express this collision kernel always in terms of the, so these are two drops or particles of almost equal size, A and an A prime, so there is the square of their concentration, local concentration. Then there is their target area, and then there is a, there might be a modulating function that accounts for the fact that the particles are not distributed homogeneously, and then there is this the average value of their relative velocity, where the distribution of velocity is conditioned on the fact that the relative distance is the sum of their radius. So in this expression, you have two features that I want to discuss. One is the way particles distribute in space that will enter in this function that is called the radial distribution function, and another term related to their velocity differences. So these are snapshots of particle distribution in space from DNS. This is Stokes number 2, and I will define the Stokes number in just 1 second, but it's related to the inertia of the particles, and this is very high Stokes number, Stokes 20. And you see that, so this is for the velocity of the particles, and the color of the arrows indicate that, so gray, a very slow velocity, and black is a very high velocity, so it means that at the same position you can find particles with very different velocities. Okay? And so I will try to discuss this too. Okay, so just one slide about the model that we use for particles. It's the simplest model that we can use for a particle which has some inertia, so that doesn't follow exactly the fluid streamlines, and it has been derived by these people and under a certain number of hypotheses, which are related to the particle size, to the particle Reynolds number, to the test to be small, and to the fact that the solution has to be diluted, so there are no collisions, no real collisions, and for very heavy particles. So if with this hypothesis, the equation, so the acceleration for a heavy particle, it's just the sum of the Stokes drag and then eventually gravity acceleration if it is present. We will do numerical simulation with this form of equation only, and we will neglect gravity in the sequel. So the particle inertia is expressed in terms of an adimensional number that is the Stokes time of the particle. This is just the time it takes to the particle to respond to the fluid fluctuations, normalized to some fluid scale, and it will be the Kolmogorov time scale of the flow for us. So the smallest time scale in the turbulent flow. Okay, so just what we have been doing numerical simulation of 3D Navier-Stokes equation, forced to have a statistically stationary state, and with particles, so Lagrangian particles dispersed into the flow, and the Reynolds number of the flow is expressed like I expressed it in terms of the ratio of two times scale, because I wanted to highlight that in our numerical simulation that we did at different resolutions, so a different Reynolds number, and with the particles of Stokes number that varies in this range. So in our numerical simulation, the particle Stokes number is always such that particle never have a response time that is larger than the largest scale of the flow. Okay, so they're always, somehow they will always relax onto the fluid flow sooner or later. And these are the numbers for the particles. So you see the best that we can do is if we match the smallest scale of the flow with the real Kolmogorov scale of geophysical flow, the best that we can do is to simulate a box with a 2 meter size. Okay, so the way particles distribute in space. So this is again a snapshot of the particles in space at three different Stokes number. And so you see that they are not homogeneously distributed, but not only this, you see that the inhomogeneous distribution of particles is not only present at very small scales, but also on the large scale of the flow, because you have these bunches of particles that can have size comparable to the size of the box. But so I will not discuss the way these clusters are formed at the larger scale, but only what happened at very small scales. So this is called the dissipative range clustering or preferential concentration, and it's just, as I told you, the distribution of in space of particle, but at distances that are under the Kolmogorov scale of the flow, so at very small scales. And so how can we measure how they are distributed? So you can either use this radial distribution function that is just counting the particle at a given reciprocal distances and divided by the volume of the space in which you're counting this particle. And if you do this, the radial distribution function would be equal to 1 on average, if it's a Poissonian process, for a homogeneous distribution in space. And it will deviate with a power law behavior if the distribution in space of particle is not homogeneous. So, but instead of measuring this, we just measure something that is simply related to the radial 3D radial distribution function, and it's called the pair correlation function, this P2 over R, and it's just scaled with this number, so with this power that is called D2 in the jargon of dynamical system theory, or correlation dimension. So, yes.
What in liquid state theory will be called structure factors?
Structure factor is a kind of Fourier transform.
Of this one?
Mm-hmm. It's not more or less the same.
GFR is the probability of finding another particle within distance R if I know that there is a particle here.
G of R is counts the number of particles that are in a circle of given size R and divided by the volume of that sphere. And then
the factor is the Fourier transform of the derivative of G of R minus 1.
Derivative of G of R. Because G of R is kind of the cumulative probability distribution.
Yes, yes, but it's the cumulative.
Yes.
Yes. And so, oh, I'm sorry, eta is the Kolmogorov scale. And why, so their distance is just a dimensionalized with the Kolmogorov scale of the flow, because these processes are measured at scale smaller, so R is smaller than eta, okay? And so we did this just because it's more convenient to measure. The other thing I want to highlight is that this exponent, this correlation dimension, has to be smaller than 3. So it's more convenient to measure a power law with a positive exponent expressed in this way. So these are this probability distribution function at varying the scale in which we count particles. and for different Stokes numbers. So you see that the red curve is for Stokes 0, so tracers, which distribute homogeneously, and then going up, we have increasing Stokes number. And here in the small inset, you have the local slope of the tail of these distributions, so from which we want to extract this D2 exponent. And you see that, well, you have lots of noise, so you have to, I mean, you have to interpolate a lot to find the position of these small particles, and you need a high statistics on so a great number of particles to achieve good results when you interpolate in space and try to find two particles nearby. So now we will just look at the values of this flat region that gives us this scaling exponent D2. So this is the shape of this D2 exponent at varying the Stokes number of the particles. So D2 is equal to 3 for particles that are tracers, because they just go, they fill the volume. Remember, this is a three-dimensional flow, so they're just distributed homogeneously everywhere in space. And as it increases the deviation from 3, it means that particles are clustering more and more, okay? So you can find them more and more grouped in region of space, and then find empty regions where particles are not present there. And you see that, so this curve has a shape with a maximum for preferential concentration that is attained around Stokes 1. And at increasing Stokes, particles tend to redistribute again homogeneously. So the large limit inertia for the particle distribution in space, it's not at a very high Stokes number. So Stokes number order 3, particles start already to redistribute homogeneously in the flow. And this is because the inertia is such that they go almost like ballistic particles. And the other thing that, so I just put this table here for those interested in cloud particles, just to highlight which are the typical Stokes number for particles of this size in a turbulent cloud, depending on the level of turbulence. So you can see that for particle of 50 micron, for example, we are in the region in which this preferential concentration phenomenon is acting. And the other thing is that I want to highlight here is that this shape, so the value of this exponent at varying the Stokes number, doesn't seem to depend on the Reynolds number of the flow. These are measured at 4 different Reynolds number. Clearly, they're not the Reynolds number of clouds, but or of geophysical flows, but the Reynolds dependence, if it's there, it's very weak. Okay, so this means that particle would cluster in this same way in a geophysical flow. Now you can. So this is just one simple characterization of these clusters, but you can also ask yourself how the mass of particles in this cluster vary. So if there are fluctuations to this probability to find pairs of particles. And so you can repeat the game and generalize the idea that you want to find two particles at a given distance, generalize it, and asking yourself which is the probability to find 3, 4, or 5 or q particles at a given distance in the flow, okay? And this will just give you an idea of the fluctuation of the mass, so of the fluctuation of the mass of particles in space into the flow. And this probability is just ruled by the large deviation theory. That means that this distribution is not dominated by the small fluctuation, but by the fluctuation that are much larger than the mean one, than the Gaussian one. And it has a power law behavior with this dq exponent. And these are the measures of dq for different value of q. So d2 is what we have just seen before, and then I'm increasing the level of the moment. So this is like a moment of the distribution. And if this dq exponent vary with the order of the moment, we say that we have a multifractal distribution. So if you zoom on the snapshot of the particles in space, if you zoom at smaller scale, you will not find the same image that you have at larger scale. So it's not a simple fractal, but it's a multifractal. And you see that the shape is very similar, but what you see here is that, for example, for two different Stokes number that has the same, for example, the same correlation dimension, the same D2, then the fluctuation of mass are very different, because here, for Stokes numbers smaller than one, they are almost all equal, while here there is a large spread. So this will tell us that the mass fluctuation of particles with the same correlation dimension can be very different. And here I don't show the data for higher Stokes, for higher Reynolds number, but we didn't find any significant differences. So also for the DQ, we find that there is not a Reynolds number dependency. So okay, now I come to the way particles that encounter, so approach each other, so the relative velocity of particles at a given scale r. And so the picture that has emerged in, from theoretical works and from also numerical simulation in random flows, so in simple flows, is that at low Stokes number, so for particle with a very small inertia, the particle velocity is more or less that of the fluid. And if you are measuring particle relative velocity at very small scale, so at scales below the Kolmogorov scale, the flow will just be a smooth flow, a differentiable flow. And so the velocity differences of the two particles, if their mutual distance goes to zero, will just approach zero. Okay, it's just linearly proportional to their distance. But if we consider particles with high inertia, there can be these large velocity differences even for particles that are very, very near. And so you can imagine that this happens because your velocity field is becoming multivalued in space. And so your probability to have two nearby particles with a very large velocity difference is not negligible. And this has been called caustics or sling effect. I will go back to this in one slide. But even if you know that this is happening, then there are lots of questions that you might ask. And for example, how these velocity differences vary at changing Stokes and at changing the scale separation, always below the Kolmogorov scale of the flow, and eventually also above that scale. Which is the probability to have these events? Because if they are there, but they do not count anything, I mean, it's not a problem for example, for collisions, and also the way in which they appear. And another question that you can ask, if these velocity differences have a typical size, a typical amplitude, or we can have all sorts of caustics, all size of caustics. So just to have an hint of what we will then see on the data, you can consider the two opposite limits that are called the tracer limit and the ballistic limit. So the tracer limit is when the inertia of the particles goes to zero, particles just relax very easily onto the fluid fluctuations, and they are just so they follow fluid streamlines, so their velocity is that of the fluid. And then you have the opposite limit. Ballistic limit with infinite inertia, the particles do not see any longer the flow under them, and they go like stones. And so it's a gas of free particles that it's not affected by the flow. And what happens in between? In between these two limits, so we can start from the particle equation and just consider, for example, from the equation of the particle acceleration, we can derive it in space. And so consider the time evolution of the particle's velocity gradients. It's this non-linear equation, and in which it appears also the velocity gradients of the fluid. Of the fluid flow, clearly, that is moving the particles. And so you see that if these terms dominate in the equation, so these two terms are not important, at least at some time scale, you can have a blow up of the velocity gradients. And so this blow up of the velocity gradients means that exactly you have very large velocity differences at small separations. And why this has been called sling effect? Because it's the idea that so one particle can, because it's heavy and it's ejected by an eddy, it can get nearby a particle that was smoothly going around with a very large velocity. And so their velocity differences will be very high. So data. Okay. We measured the moments of particle velocity differences, longitudinal ones, and at varying the order of the moment. So this is just the stationary distribution of particle velocity, a change in the scale, so their mutual separation, and also clearly the Stokes number of the particles. So the first picture is for the first order moment, so just the this observable with p equal to 1, and you see, so this is the first order moment, this is the scale variation, and these are the curves for this Stokes number. So 0 are tracers, so at scales below the Kolmogorov scale you have just a smooth behavior and smooth differentiable behavior, and at larger scale you have the Kolmogorov-like behavior. So the velocity of the particles is rough, of the fluid the particles is rough, and it scales with 1/3. And then at increasing the inertia, you see that the major effect is at scales below the Kolmogorov scale, and the particle velocity difference can become almost independent on their mutual separation. So clearly it doesn't go to zero when the particle distance goes to zero. And it can also become order one. This clearly happens for very high Stokes number. And for this particular Stokes number, the effect goes on into the inertial range also, because clearly the particle response time is so large that it's comparable to the eddy turnover time of fluid fluctuations in the inertial range. And so how can we define if inertia is small or large? So instead of using just the Stokes number normalized with the Kolmogorov time scale, that is something that is related to the fastest fluid fluctuation, let's redefine the Kolmogorov let's redefine the Stokes number in terms of the eddy turnover time of the fluid eddies at some scale r, and we will say that inertia is negligible, the effects of inertia is negligible if the particle response time is much smaller than the eddy turnover time at that scale, while inertia is important if these two times are comparable or if tau p is even larger than tau r. And this gives you a scale, it's just very easy, this gives you a scale in terms of the so Kolmogorov scale of the flow and of the Stokes number at which you can discriminate between these two regimes of inertia dominated regime, as long as the scale separation is smaller than this R star, and negligible inertia because the particle velocity difference is as relaxed onto that of the flow. Okay. So this is the same picture as before, but now I have the second order structure function, so the second order moment, and these Stokes numbers are a bit smaller, are not showing for Stokes up to 70, but I want to show the data at two different Reynolds number. And you see that the Reynolds number dependence again seems to be very weak. I would like to see more in detail what happens in this scale, and so I'm going to focus on the scaling behavior at this scale, so below the Kolmogorov scale of the flow, and so what is called the dissipative range statistics for the velocity field. So how do I analyze this structure function? I want to look at the behavior of the scaling exponents that characterize this structure function at varying the order of the moment and at varying the Stokes number. So the first...
As Stokes increases, it seems that it's less and less power law. It's somehow getting a little bit concave, don't you think?
Yeah, it's not that easy to have, because you see that the Kolmogorov scale of the flow, it's here, and then...
For tracers, you see a decent power law.
Yes, for tracers.
And two of them, I mean, one below and one above. And then for small stocks, still you see something like almost a straight line, but...
Yes.
You also see no theoretical argument for power law at Stokes order unity.
Yes, you might have two different contributions, just one. Sure. A balance of two contributions, and I will come on to this at the very end. So just look at the exponent for the first moment. Okay, so this is called C1, and so. From the reasoning we did before, we expect two different limits, so that it goes to one when it's the inertia is very small, and it goes to zero, and almost a velocity jump when the inertia is very strong. And so that then the velocity difference become independent of the scale, okay? And this is exactly what we obtain. So this is the behavior of this C1 exponent as a function of the Stokes number and for two different Reynolds number. You see that at very small Stokes it goes to one, so to the differentiable tracer limit. And then at high inertia, now for the velocity, high inertia means Stokes order 10, it goes to the zero limit, in which particles are just ballistically moving in the flow. And again here you see that these two Reynolds number, there is not much variation. And now, let's see what happens to higher order moments, so to this Xp exponent for higher order moments. So higher order means these are higher order, because p goes up to 2. Remember, this is the scaling in the dissipative range, so we are not going very high with the higher order, with the level of the moments we are considering. And so what we have here, this is the XCP at varying P, so at varying the order of the structure function, and for different Stokes number. So this is the curve that you have for the smallest Stokes number. This is very small inertia, and particles are almost behaving like fluid tracers. So they have their Xp exponents are just linearly varying. This is what you expected for a smooth flow. And here inertia is increasing. And you see that this curve at increasing inertia, so this is a little higher inertia and then going up, this curve starts to deviate from the linear smooth behavior sooner and sooner. And then also that they tend to saturate, so their scaling exponents do not depend on the order of the fluctuations any longer. And what does it mean that they saturate? Means that these velocity differences are somehow dominated by events of a typical size. You can think, for example, to burgers, and this size would be the size of the shock that dominates the velocity structure functions. Or you can think to passive scalar turbulence, in which you have also saturation of scaling exponents, and this is just the typical size of thermal fronts in temperature turbulence, for example. And so the other thing that I want to show you is that we can measure this saturation exponent, so the number at which these curves level off. And this is called Xi infinite, and this is the way Xi infinite varies with the Stokes number. So you see that it varies continuously, and it goes to zero, as we expect for very high inertia, so to the ballistic limit. And what we could highlight is that, in particular, this Xi infinite exponent varies with this curve that is traced here for Stokes number smaller than 7, and then it's just 0 for Stokes number larger than 7. And so this is the way the saturation exponent behaves. So what does it mean, this behavior? It means that for small inertia, so when this exponent is larger, the amplitude of this caustic or this almost singular effect can be large. This event can have a large amplitude, but the probability which goes in this way is small. So you can have very large velocity jumps, but with a very small probability to happen. While when inertia increases, this event fill the space. They are almost everywhere. So you have caustics everywhere in the space, but then their amplitude can be not that big, because the velocity, the single point velocity of inertial particles decrease quite fast with the Stokes number. So even if we have this event, caustic event that fill the space, they will have not very large amplitude. Okay, so we are almost at the end. Now, what I want to discuss a bit is there any relation to the way particles distribute in space, so the way they cluster in space, and their velocity differences when they approach each other. And so you see, this is a snapshot of the particle cluster in our numerical simulation from three different Stokes numbers. So it's just a projection. And the behavior of velocity differences in a one-dimensional model. This is due to Wilkinson and Gustafsson, Mellig and Gustafsson, I'm sorry. And you see that, so they show the velocity differences of particles when the event is a smooth event, then when it starts to become almost singular, and then you have the singular event. But you see that they, if you intend this shape like a number of particles along this line, it seems the distribution is smooth in space. So can we really think that in the caustics particles are smoothly distributed, or there is some relation to the fact that then in space they are not really smoothly distributed, but they are multifractally distributed? So to answer this question, if there is a relation, we should measure this. So we should measure the joint probability to observe two particles at a given separation r with that given velocity separation. And this is not easy to do in more than one dimension. It has been done in one dimension by Gustafsson and Mellig, who proposed, by solving the equation for this joint probability, of particles at a given separation at with a given velocity differences. Who suggested this this idea? So they suggested that still at very small scale, so this is still the velocity, the scaling of the velocity differences at separation that are smaller than the Kolmogorov time scale, they propose this shape for the structure function of velocity, of inertial velocity, of inertial particle velocities. So it has, it is the sum of two terms. The first term is a smooth term, so it's a smooth scaling behavior with a prefactor that it's clearly dependent on Stokes' number, but it would be an order one prefactor. And then a term that is related to Kaustik's event, and it has some scaling exponent that I will just discuss in a while, but there is also a prefactor that it's an activation prefactor. So it means that Kaustik's appear as soon as the Stokes number is different from zero, and this was also, this was proposed previously in by the group of Falkovich and of Grisha, and by also Wilkinson and Malik. And so you see that when the Stokes number is very small, Kaustik's can be there, but the prefactor is very small, so we don't see, really see them. But then when the Stokes number becomes large, they start to be important, and this term will eventually dominate. So this proposal is in terms of a bifractal behavior for the structure function of the velocity difference scaling exponent, that it's not very different from what we observe here, because you see that these curves are almost bifractal, in the sense you have a linear growth, linear dependency on the order of the moment here, and then woof, almost horizontal one, even if here there could be some bump that we cannot really resolve. And so, but moreover, the proposal is not just in terms of a bifractal behavior, but it's in terms of a relation between these xi infinite exponents, so the exponent that characterize the typical velocity jump of inertial particles, and the exponent that characterize the way particles cluster in space. So this is really the D2 exponent that we see previously, so the way particles distribute in space. And we tried to verify, so while we couldn't measure this from our data, but possibly this term is there, but we do not have enough resolution at going to small Stokes number and small scale to see if the prefactor here is really an activating prefactor, but we could measure, we could verify this hypothesis, so we compare the value of the xi infinite exponent that we measure with this 3 minus D2 exponent. And these are the results for two different Reynolds numbers, so red is the smaller one, and you see that the, well, here I changed the position of 3, but it's just the same. So you see that the agreement between D2 and 3 minus xi infinite is very well observed for Stokes number larger than 1, so Stokes number that are above the maximum of clusterization, while we do not observe it at a smaller Stokes number. So this means that, at least for what we can say, what we can see from our data is that if there is a relation between the way particles approach each other and the way they distribute in space, this relation is more complicated for very small inertia.
But this prediction was not from our papers, but from Wilkinson and Malik.
Yes, 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 yes. It's from this, from this paper. We, Gustafsson and Malik.
I always thought that Kaustik's are in one places and multifractal regions, which determines this D2 are in other places. So I always thought that there are two different sets of. So.
Yes. So these papers are quoted for this. Mainly for this idea that Kaustik's are activated by appear in this way, and while this hypothesis is in this paper.
Okay. And notice that this hypothesis only makes sense at small Stokes number.
Yes. Very because the where the equation can be solved, yes, the model. Yeah. Sure. Yes, where it doesn't work. Okay, so just last slide. So now we jump from small scale to large scale, and this is just, I just wanted to show you that, so this is the first, still the first order structure function as a function of scale and for some different Stokes number. What I wanted to show is just that when you go to large scale, so to scales comparable of to the inertial range scale, you see that at very large scale, the amplitude of the velocity differences decreases with the inertia. So if we just measure, we just compare the particle Vrms in terms of the fluid one, as a function of the Stokes number, it goes down. So effectively the particle typical fluctuation at large scale decreases with the Stokes number of the particles. Okay, now, and just this is just a cartoon. It's the last slide. Is that now we come back to the motivation. So we say that we wanted to study these things to understand better the behavior of the collision kernel. And this is just a cartoon in the sense that I just put here the behavior of this radial distribution function, which takes into account of clustering, and the behavior of the velocity differences only in terms of their scaling exponents, because we cannot control prefactors, so we cannot really control the amplitude of these objects. And you see that in any case, there is an increasing of this Gauss collision rate compared to the Safman-Turner model that is valid for very small particles, so for tracers particle. But clearly, this Gauss collision kernel it's just an hint of what would happen. So we can say that inertia is most likely increasing the collision rates of particles, and this has also been quantified in a work by Grisha and Alain. But what we really would like to do is to have the behavior of this joint distribution of particle velocity and particle separation that would answer the question of collisions. So summarizing, we have seen that preferential concentration is very important, particularly it is maximal at Stokes number around 0.7 or the 1. And we have seen that the relative velocity statistics at small scales is very intermittent, in the sense that particle velocity differences are dominated by quasi-singular structures, so velocity jumps. And the way these two observable, so particle distribution and particle velocity differences, at least in the scaling exponent, doesn't seem to depend on the Reynolds number. So this idea so might be of interest also for geophysical flow, because we don't see any Reynolds number dependencies, while we cannot control prefactors. So this is another question. And these two phenomena are not only important for the way particles meet, but clearly also for the way particles separate, because if two heavy particles have a large initial velocity difference, for example, they separate very fast. And at least in an initial regime, they can separate much faster than tracers. So this is important also for if we want to quantify the way particles explore the space in a turbulent medium. And then, so even with this minimal model for the particles that is valid when the particles are very small, so it's really a minimal model. We didn't have any any finite size effect. We didn't have any gravity effect, and there are lots of questions that are still to be answered. And what we know now is really coming from a continuous change from experimental numerical and particularly by theoretical work done on very simple flows, but that give the hint on what is happening in real turbulence. Okay.
Clustering maximum clustering around the Stokes number 27. What is the fraction of particles in the cluster within the cluster?
So in
just an idea.
These are particles that do not see each other, so you can put as many as you want.
That's why. Yeah. Because from the picture, it seems that it's pretty crowded.
Yeah, it's pretty crowded. So you should rescale these on some typical numbers that I don't know, so I cannot tell you. But this D2, if you then rescale with some constant that is related to the typical concentration in the flow, then this D2 exponent just gives you the fraction of particles there. So it's just a question of putting the right average.
No, the fact that maybe, since you have only a one-way coupling, you don't have any interaction with the flow. But if it's very concentrated, it's going to happen.
No, this phenomenon when the, not with the void fraction, but when the mass loading is high, change completely. When the mass loading is high, these things change completely. But also because when the mass loading is high, the typical time for collision is much smaller than the other time scales. So these particles collide and meet very very frequently.
I have a related question. It's about the correlation between, because you say, what is the correlation between the structure of the flow and the clustering? I had the idea, but maybe I'm wrong, that it seemed that the particle tried to escape the region of very high vorticity, because just centrifugal forces. So there will cluster, because it's solid particle, of course, if it was bubble, it would be the opposite. So
yes.
They will cluster. So did you make any correlation between your flow structure? I thought you did at some point.
Yes, I didn't show any, but any picture. But if you try, if you measure the probability to observe particles in vertical regions of the flow or in strain regions, and you compare these numbers, so the probability of particles being out of vertical regions has the same shape of this D2. So at least in this flow, you can really understand the small-scale clustering as an effect of preferential concentration of particles in strain regions and out of vortices. But this, I didn't show, but this behavior of small-scale clustering is observed even in flows that have very very short time correlation, and so they never really form eddies, and so it is really related to the dissipative nature of the particle equation. So really, that particles tend to cluster on a fractal object. But in real turbulence, the relation is clear between this small scale clustering and the preferential concentration out of vortices.
Okay, if you don't have other questions, let's end.
It seems Stokes number of 7 is special. Why is 7?
So 7 is...
I explained 7. It's also special.
7 is also ask is also the Stokes number at which, if we go back to
7 could be nuclear Reynolds dependent.
Yes, to this, because here there are error bars, so we don't really know at which Stokes number particles are back to the fully homogeneous distribution, but it, so 7 is also the number, the Stokes number at which they are again homogeneously distributed. So if you think of this relation between their spatial distribution and their velocity differences, it makes sense. But then what is special in 7, I mean, might be Reynolds dependent, might be also flow dependent.
Stokes 1/7.
Yeah, and might be also flow dependent, I mean.
Okay, so let's